So today is a day for helpful tips for the spiritual wayfarer in the 21st century. One needs to understand that this world is an illusion. It's actually layer upon layer of different textured illusions. And if one is going to walk through this world as a spiritual wayfarer, one needs to have skillful means to walking through these illusions so that the veils of illusion become veils of revelation rather than veils of deception. This is from the Diamond Sutra by the Buddha. So I tell you, thus shall you think of all this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble floating in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering light, a phantom or a dream. That is this fleeting world. So if you ever take it too seriously, remember it is just a flash of lightning in a summer cloud. This is the illusions of this world. And the Sufis explain it. God has 70,000 veils of light and 70,000 veils of darkness. Were they to be removed, the glories of his face would burn away everything perceived by the sight of his creatures. And so the Sufis understand this is a world of illusion, and there are all these veils of illusion, but they are there for a purpose, because if they weren't there, we would all be burnt up by the brilliance of truth, by the incredible light of the beloved. And part of the journey of the mystic is to journey through these veils, gradually being able to bear more and more light, more and more truth. Otherwise, if you experienced it directly at the beginning, your brain would be fried. You just wouldn't be able to manage it. And this is why Ibn al-Arabi says, we are veiled from thee only through thee. And this is one of the paradoxes of the mystical journey, that in this world is a world of illusion, is a world of deception. Mrs. Tweedy often used to quote this line in the Lord's Prayer, lead me not into temptation. And she said, why would God lead us into temptation? For what purpose? And she said, look at the world around you that he has created. It is a place full of temptation. So lead me not into temptation. And this is the very skillful way that the mystic learns to walk through this world, so the veils of deception become veils of revelation. And life is the greatest teacher. Life teaches us about the truth that is hidden within life. It is one of the secrets of the Sufi, which is why I call this book A Story of Life's Mystical Secret. Because part of the dance of the Sufi is how to find the secret hidden within life. I always think it's a bit like as a child on Easter day when you go egg hunting for those Easter eggs in the garden. Something I love to do with my grandchildren. I hide them and I make clues how to find them, and they love it. And really, life is like that. There are little nuggets of truth hidden within life. And part of the journey of the mystic is that you follow the signs. I have placed my signs on the horizons and in themselves so that they may know I am the real. And if you follow the signs, if you catch the clues, then in this hide and seek of life, in the beloved's dance of revelation, you can find truth. If you know how to look, if you are attentive, if you are watchful, if you are a bit silly at times. It's not for very, very serious people, because it's a game. Like Easter egg hunting. Some of them are obvious, some of them are hidden. So there are these veils, and I will talk a little bit more about them. But in the last 20 years, something has changed in this world. And it's become very, very strange in a way that it wasn't even really in the early 90s. And the veils are no longer the kind of straightforward veils that they were even when I grew up. So one needs a quality of spiritual attention, of awareness, that surprisingly few texts have been written about today. It is not just that they are more deceptive. There is energy in there that is more manipulative than it was 20 years ago. The veils that are present in the world, they are moving, they are changing, there is energy present. And you don't have to be clairvoyant to see it's all more and more out of balance. I give you again a simple example. When in Rumi's time, you know, he said, a woman is God shining through subtle veils. Ibn al-Arabi, he also said, a woman is the highest form of earthly beauty as long as you realize it's a reflection of divine beauty. So there you have something very clear. And that's why the Sufis talk about veils, because of the veiled woman. It is both a seduction but also a revelation. That within the seduction of the feminine, you will find divine beauty. It's the highest form of incarnated beauty, which is an aspect of the divine. And for women on the path, you should all read the story of Yusuf and Zalaika told by Jami, who is one of our superiors, Naqshbandi. Jami tells the story of Zalaika, who falls in love with the image of the divine lover in the form of Yusuf. Initially captivated by his incomparable form, she is oblivious to the underlying reality. So at the beginning, she just sees the outer form of this beautiful young man. And then, at the beginning, she's captivated by the beauty of the outer form and doesn't realize that the real beauty is hidden behind the veil of mystery. But her journey is to find the source of this beauty rather than its reflection in the dance of forms. And Jami says, now that you have seen the reflection, make haste for the source. The reflection is as ephemeral as a rose's blush. If you want permanence, turn towards the source. So it's very clear, there is the outer beauty, there is the outer allure, but if you are aware that it is a reflection of a deeper beauty, then it's fine. And Sufis are lovers of beauty, and the whole symbolism of the garden and the images of the garden that belong to the soul, and Sufi poetry that is about the beauty of a woman that is a reflection of the beauty of the soul. So you take the outer form, and as long as you are not caught just in the mirage of the form, it's fine. It will lead you to the secret. The images in life, it's dance of appearances. Yes, if you just take them at face value, they are deceptive, they are the veils of deception. But if you take it with the right attitude and see it as a revelation of the divine, then you follow it back from the secondary causes back to the primary cause. So that's very, very clear. And as long as in the Sufi manuals you're supposed to live a life of poverty and simplicity, and then this world, the outer life, would take you to the inner life. And the outer forms would take you to the inner truth. And this is the traditional understanding in which much of the world was directly a divine creation. If you lived in nature, or even the architecture in the mosques and the temples, They were designed as a reflection of an inner beauty. So there were signs of remembrance around you. Yes, you can get lost in this world, but if you'd made the effort to master your lusts, to master your greed and basic desires, then the forms of the outer world would take you gradually, step by step. And every spiritual traditions, they have manuals describing these steps. For example, in Attar's Conference of the Birds, there are the seven valleys of the quest that take you through the veils back to the truth, which you see the mirror of your own true self. And for those of you who've ever studied Zen, there are the ox herding pictures, which are again a simple manual that take you on the journey, that describe the work that needs to be done to move through the darkness or the density of the outer world to find the emptiness and to find the truth. And it was very clear, Sufism being a path of the householder, one did this in the midst of life. But if, for example, you were a Buddhist and you renounce the world and you live in a monastery, then you do it through confronting the inner demons which you visualize or which come to you, which are the illusions of life. And you have to face them and master them and go through them. Occasionally allow yourself to be seduced by them. As in the young man who came to the Sufi sheikh and he said he wanted to follow the path, and the sheikh said, "Have you ever been in love?" And the young man was astounded and said, "Of course not. I have renounced the world. I have been doing my prayers. I have been doing the zikr." And the sheikh said, "Go out into the world, fall in love, get married, have your heart broken, and then come back," which he did years later as a mature person and was ready for spiritual life. And those are often the sheikh would push people out into life to experience the illusions of life and to have the strength and the inner fortitude and the commitment to find their way through it. But it isn't quite like that anymore. The veils that are around us, a lot of them are man-made veils, and they're very strange veils. There are things inside of them that get into your consciousness, and partly they're manufactured, partly they're computer-generated, but there are also other things inside of them, and you need to be much more careful, much, much more attentive. There are more spiritual illusions, for example. I always say the physical illusion is the easiest to get rid of. You want to have a nice car, okay? If you really want, you get it. And either it fulfills you or it doesn't. But it's kind of done, you know? I always give the example, I always wanted one of those Volkswagen camper vans when I was young, and take the kids on holiday, go everywhere you like. So I couldn't afford a new one, so I bought a second-hand one, was really happy, caught in the illusion of it, took it for a holiday to Devon, 3.5 hours driving, the engine blows up, get back home, towed, 11 o'clock at night, fantasy is gone, car still remains. The outer ones are fine, the inner ones are more subtle. You have to be much, much more attentive. To give you some sort of basic facts, Bysav said there are three doors of Maya. And I just thought it'd be helpful to explore those, and you can see if any of those still resonate with you. He said the first was money. Money is interesting. Tweedy taught me a lot about money when I first met her, about how to be attentive to money, to watch it, to use it for what you need to use it. She said one of the first questions you're asked on the other side is, how did you use the money you were given? What I've noticed is, for example, some people have money karmas, they really have to learn about money. Some people don't have money karmas and they just get what they need. Some people get more than what they need, which can cause trouble. I think most of us now, looking around the room, we kind of grown up a bit. You'd, You realize money can't buy you love. I mean, it's not going to make you happy. Maybe it's a little bit of illusion for some people. I don't know. I mean, just be careful. Just be attentive to money. It can be an illusion if you want more than you need. I just think it's best to live a simple life. The danger of money in some ways today is it's tied in with this consumer culture. And this consumer culture is not what it seems. It's partly manipulation by big corporations, but it's not just that. There's a certain dark magic in there. It's completely mad, if you look at it with any detachment, that people go to the mall to find happiness. Or I've looked at it enough not to want to look at it anymore, but just be aware that money is caught in this dark magic of this consumerist society that seems to want to destroy the world at an ever-increasing rate. Just be careful. I mean, most of you are far too mature and spiritually advanced to be caught in this surface glitter and glitz, but just be aware there are things there that I say turns dreams into desires. There's nothing wrong in having a dream for a new bathroom. Why not? But just be careful that you don't get caught in it. And then it kind of takes attention away from other things. It requires a certain maturity, but it's not quite as simple as it was 40 years ago when you got one of those horrible avocado green bathrooms and it was the best possible thing you could get. In the end, it's a bathroom and you're having a bath in it. It's not going to take you nearer to anything except water. But what I'm just saying is that money is, it's not just money, it's energy. You do have to learn how to use it if you're a mature person on the path in life. Give it a certain attention, but it has become caught in a very destructive dark magic which nobody really understands. And I find it interesting that all the spiritual writers that I've read don't even go anywhere near it. What is this consumer society really? What is really going on? What is making this whole civilization so pathologically self-destructive? Be aware, it is a veil, it is a very slippery veil. It promises all sorts of things that it isn't going to give you, and most of you, you're not going to feel better after you've been shopping. So that's money. Property. Well, Tweedy said you don't have a house has you. Again, probably most of you either got somewhere to live or you haven't. It's okay, just don't get caught up in it because it's an illusion. So just be careful. I think I loved having a house. I had it for 6 months and Tweedy moved in. I've been looking after it ever since. Then we have the third illusion, which I was a bit reluctant to talk about by some point, sex, right? Sex illusion. Now, I was thinking 4 o'clock this morning, well, and I thought, well, looking at the age group, you know, most of us are no longer in the grip of the illusion of sex. It was fun while it lasted. There are under 40s or under 50s. Great experience. Enjoy it. If you're driven by lust, it'll pass. There's a lovely line. I like Leonard Cohen. Some of you know this Canadian pop singer. And one of his songs recently was, "I ache in the places where I used to play." Because he was, of course, a great lover. I ache in the places where I used to play. So some of us are, once you start to ache in the places where you used to play, I don't think you can be quite caught in the illusion. But then I thought about a slightly more subtle thing. Particularly for women, it has to do with relationships. And it's something I've found that 20 years of listening to women, that does seem for a lot of women to be this longing, desire, need, unmet need to have a relationship. I'm not quite sure if you can have a real relationship with a guy as you like to. I was thinking, you know, my father had no idea that you could even have a relationship. It never occurred to him. His father, my grandfather, the admiral, no. And he ever talked to his wife. I don't think Baisab had a relationship with his wife. The women's quarters and men's quarters. I'm not quite sure if people are aware of how a recent idea it is that a man should provide a meaningful... I don't think my father ever asked any of his wives how they felt. One wanted the heating on and he bought her a coat instead. But probably I'm not the best person to talk about it. I found it very interesting. I found this idea of relationship very interesting and the feminine need for relationship. I can count on the fingers of 20 hands the number of women who've come to me upset because their partner doesn't relate to them, or longing for a partner who will relate to them. And I'm not quite sure how much it's an illusion and how much it's, you know, maybe we're going through a genetic mutation and there are going to develop these sensitive, receptive, intuitive, listening guys who actually say to their significant other, their partner, rather than pass the marmalade, how do you feel this morning? Or is it just an idea created by women's magazines? I don't know. But then I was thinking, maybe the millennial generation has actually moved beyond it because they're no longer interested in real relationships because they have Facebook likes now. And you don't even have to bother with real people because it's all how many people like you online. I do think you can have a relationship with God, yes. It's a very odd relationship because you're not quite sure if he's really listening. And he doesn't ask you how you feel, but sometimes you get overwhelmed by love or suffering. There is this story of the person who complains saying, you never hear me, I never get any response. And God replies and says, you're crying to me, your Allah is my response. The fact that you are crying to me is actually my response. Rumi writes a poem about this when he says, we are intimate beyond belief. The real relationship for a mystic is with God. Don't get caught in an illusion, because it's really a matter of discrimination. This is why spiritual maturity has a lot to do with discrimination. Mrs. Tweedy had this friend, Dr. Engel, who was a friend of Jung and Emma Jung. He was one of the wisest therapists I've ever met. He was old by the time I got to know him, and I asked him at that time about romantic love and projections in relationships and how he thought you could deal with it. He'd been a marriage counselor for many, many years. And he just said two words. He said, unconditional love. I do think it's good to have somebody to love, to care for. I think that's a very human, you can call it bonding if you like, just call it unconditional love and try to make it unconditional. And if it's unconditional, it won't get caught up in illusions, because illusions by their very nature are conditional. Doesn't mean you can't complain now and again, but be aware of the collective in which we live as there is less and less truth there, as it is more and more this computer-generated, darkness-infused reality, which it is, that everybody is chasing desires more and more and more and more because there's nothing real. And this is actually dangerous. It produces a very strange atmosphere. What it means is, spiritually, you just have to be much, much more careful. Sadly, I've had a few examples just in the last few months of people who've been on this path for a long time who should have known better, who just weren't attentive, and then they got caught in something. And then they lost. As I said, the soul's connection is fine, but they no longer were aligned with their own soul. And once that happens, things get very subtly distorted. This in-between world between your consciousness and the soul, those planes, they used to be quite clear. That symbolic world is very distorted now. And there are things in there. I don't like to describe too much. There are entities there. But we're very, very naive as a culture. We don't really know what's going on. And nobody really knows what's true or what isn't true. Maybe that's just the destiny, but we're trying to stay aligned to something true, to stay aligned to something real. We're trying to make this journey back to God, journey home. There are still veils of illusion that are veils of revelation. A rose is still a rose, and behind that, in the center of the rose, there is a memory of something else, and a beautiful sunset is still a beautiful sunset. But there's a lot more stuff present than there ever used to be. And it gets in much, much more quickly than you're aware of. Just like it gets into your computer in a way it didn't 10 years ago. When we first went online, it was much simpler. And now there's stuff, and it comes in, and it comes in, and it comes in without you even being aware of it. It's all manipulated, and it's all very strange. It's okay if you're really, really attentive. You can enjoy life, but don't get caught. Be attentive. Watch your step. We have these principles of the path. They're amazing if you actually live by them. If you're aware of your breath, then you're not going to get caught in stuff. It brings you back to yourself. It keeps you aligned so that this connection with what is real, with what is true in yourself and in your family, it's a central note. It's an incredibly addictive culture that is now feeding off itself, and it is now global. And people don't really understand what's going on. Just be careful, be aligned, do your practice. Just watch if you're getting caught in something. When I got caught in my Volkswagen camper, it blew up, end of story, all right? But if now I was shopping for a Volkswagen camper, I'd get advertisements for the next year coming at me all the time. It's much more difficult just to push it all to one side. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy life, but be careful, please, because as I say, I've noticed a few things in the last 6 months with people, and then they lost that moment. But then you have to do a lot of work to bring yourself back, to bring yourself back, to be aligned. It's like anything. When it's flowing, it works beautifully. When the human being is aligned with the truth is aligned with the human being, the in-breath and the out-breath, the zikr is said, we go together in the night. When you die, whew, you go through the first three planes without a problem. If you knew what that meant, it's really great. One thing I became aware of recently, that if you're spiritually conscious in this world, when you die, you take that spiritual consciousness with you into the other worlds, which means you can go places. You don't get caught in the collective on the other side. And if you lose it, and if you lose it before you die, or you get caught in stuff you don't have to get caught in, and it's unfinished business, then it's just a mess on the other side. Just do what you need. Once you learn how to do it, is this what I need or is this what I want? That was this amazing line in the Sufi story of Mushkil Gusha. If you need enough and want little enough, is it a desire? A little desire is okay. Cream cake is nice enough. But we have all the instructions. The instructions are there. It used to be you could take a week off. You've got to be really careful now, because a week of forgetfulness and you've got, there's this current that can take you places and it wasn't there before. There's this magic in the veils that wasn't there before. The veils distort much more than they used to. You just have to be much, much more attentive. That's why I said, I don't believe in mindfulness, I believe in attention. Attentive, just watch. If you watch, if you do it, then the path protects you. If you have the right adab, the path protects you. If you live from a place of sincerity, the path protects you. But just be careful, please. So that's really what I wanted to talk about this morning. Look, this is a world of illusion, yes. And as mature spiritual practitioners, which most of you are, you've learned how to live in this world of illusion. Enjoy it, but it's fleeting. It's a bubble on a stream. It's beautiful, terrible. It's an illusion. And you've learned to allow life to teach you the lessons it's like you need to be taught, to have your heart broken, however it is, to get the car and then realize it's a load of junk, to hope for the relationship you're never going to have, whatever it is that turns you on. And then you live in the world but not of the world. This is solitude in the crowd. This is our foundational Naqshbandi principle. Outwardly to be with the people, inwardly to be with God. We're living in a world in which people, they're clicking and swiping more and more. There's more and more stuff they're caught in. It's more and more obsessive. And we can't change that. And we're part of it, but we don't belong there. Our journey is somewhere else. In a way, one can do less and less. But one can keep aligned, one can keep the song of the soul aligned, one can keep the truth alive within one's own heart. And one can practice loving kindness. I really believe simple practice of loving kindness, unconditional love, that also keeps you aligned, it keeps you purified. And so just be sensible, be careful, be attentive. If you see yourself being caught in an illusion, stop it, laugh at yourself. Just be careful, be aligned, do your practice.